call the docket.
Case 1, Lamont Creasy, against the Commonwealth of Virginia. Kathleen A. Ortiz, public defender for the appellant. Mark R. Gary, Attorney General. Benjamin H. Cash, Assistant Attorney General for the appellate.
Good morning,
you may proceed.
Thank you, sir. May it please the court, my name is Kathleen Ortiz. I'm here on behalf of Antoine Creasy in this case, which involves the issuance, or rather the lack of issuance of a lesser-included instruction in the case of possession with intent to distribute. Mr. Creasy was faced with two charges of possession with intent to distribute heroin and cocaine, and at issue was the proffered instructions the defense counsel at trial proffered for the included lesser-included offenses of simple possession of heroin and cocaine. The trial court in its denial, and I apologize, Your Honor, I would like to reserve five minutes. The trial court in its decision not to issue those instructions to the jury determined that there was not the necessary independent evidence to support the instructions, finding that there was not more than scintilla of evidence to support them.
But how can there be independent evidence of the absence of an intent to distribute when the defendant himself admitted that he did distribute both heroin and cocaine?
Well, Your Honor, respectfully, he also admitted, however, that he used heroin.
Well, that's not mutually inconsistent at all. You can use and distribute. But the Court of Appeals opinion focused on the absence of affirmative evidence negating the intent to distribute, which is the only issue for the lesser included.
I think, Your Honor, the real question turns on what did the court come to mean by independent evidence. You know, interestingly enough, initially it seemed that the language that was being used by the courts was scintilla of evidence. And then at some point, it changed to the issuance of the language independent evidence when it dealt with lesser-included offenses. But the question, what does that really mean? Does that mean the defendant has to testify that it wasn't his intent to distribute? Or does it mean that the defense can rely on the evidence that was produced through the Commonwealth's witnesses that would support the conclusion that he had the intent only to possess?
But I wonder if the semantical difference between scintilla, or more than a scintilla, and independent really is relevant in a case like this where there is uncontradicted evidence from the defendant that he sold both. And the evidence, particularly the heroin, was it was pre-cut, not retail-ready, and obviously raw heroin.
Well, Your Honor, I think when you look at the evidence, and I don't want to be flippant here, but nothing in Mr. Creasy's statement to Investigator Scott said that he possessed this particular quantity of heroin and cocaine that he intended to distribute it. The evidence that was supported or that was presented by the Commonwealth was that he used a significant amount of heroin each day. Now, no inquiry was made by the investigators to whether he used cocaine or not, but the items that were found in close proximity to both the cocaine and the heroin would support that, in fact, Mr. Creasy used both. Not only a state that he used, but you have the red straw in which there was residue found.
But he said he sold cocaine and that he sold that too, that is, in addition to the heroin. And the whole conversation with the officer was about the heroin and the cocaine found in the little bag right beside him on the bed, not something they found, you know, a day later.
Well, I don't know if it was ever actually described in, is this cocaine and this heroin, did you intend to sell this specific quantity? I think these statements that are made were made in the past tense. I have sold. I have bought.
Actually, the statement is, I sell that too. It's present tense.
But does that mean that he's intending to sell that particular, or just generally, I sell socks at Walmart. I sell cocaine. The question is what the intent was as to those drugs he had in his possession at that particular time. And what we'd submit is that the other evidence that was submitted by the Commonwealth in this case, the straw with residue on it, the digital scales with residue on it, the fact that there was a lack of the other packaging from the corner baggies, in other words, the cutoff bags, those were not found in the household as far as the investigators could tell. And then you have the business card, which the officers testified could be used either to package into capsules or could be used to line up heroin and cocaine to snort it through the straw. There's no other explanation that was offered by the Commonwealth for the presence of that red straw, which, of course, typically referred to as an ingestion device. It's not as if it was a
straw. May I ask you this question? Let's assume you're right. The instruction should have been given.
We're directed by statute to do harmless error analysis. Well, you know, we see cases where there's just a small amount of drugs, there's maybe very little cash. These facts are a little more amplified than those scenarios. Why wouldn't this be harmless error, assuming you're right on the instruction point?
Because, Your Honor, I think the jury could have, in that position, made just as equally just made the determination that the facts supported a simple possession as they could have for possession.
With that quantity of drugs, amount of cash, the other evidence, including the statements?
I believe so, Your Honor. And I think where you look at this, where he has admitted himself based on questioning by the officer that he is a significant heroin user, I think that would support the position. And here's the irony of it. You know, I don't think the Commonwealth can pick and choose what parts they want the jury to believe of the statements that Mr. Creasy has made, because if they're to take the position, don't believe the part where he says that he's used heroin, then we can just as easily make the reverse claim, don't believe the part where he said that he's sold in the past. The circumstances in the case are sort of ironic, because he very quickly gives up the information, is very cooperative with the officers, and then I guess one alternative to consider is that he was trying to protect the other person or other people in the household. This is not a situation where he made any significant...
Is there any suggestion of that? I mean, that's not more than a scintilla if you're imagining it creatively, as you should, but there's nothing in the record to imply that.
I think that you're correct, Aaron, but that is an alternative to consider. What we're saying here, though, is that the evidence that was presented, it's more than just speculation that this might have been simply for possession, simple possession. There's actual evidence that was produced before the trial court of ingestion devices, of a business card that could have been used to line up heroin and cocaine for use, of his actual statement to the officer that he is a significant heroin user and he bought a significant amount that day. Now, it didn't indicate whether that,
why does that negate the intent to distribute when he admits he was distributing? I mean, I don't follow the logic of that. Yes, there's sufficient evidence he was a user. Where's the sufficient evidence that he wasn't also a seller when he said he was a seller and he was being asked about the stuff laying around him in the bed, heroin and cocaine?
Well,
in the context, it's pretty clear what he's talking about.
I guess respectfully, if he had said to the detectives at the time, no, I did not intend to distribute that, I don't think that would necessarily have had any more weight before this court than his statement that he did sell in the past. Here's the problem.
If he had said that, he probably would get a letter of instruction. In fact, that's the kind of case where a lesser included would ordinarily be given. Yes. There's some affirmative evidence, you can believe it or disbelieve it, that he was not intending to sell. All you have is there's affirmative evidence he used. Okay, fine. He obviously did.
I would just fall back on our position, Your Honor, that the question was never asked what he intended to do with this particular lot of heroin and cocaine. And I think where you've got the other devices, the other ingestion devices available, it's just as equally probable that it was in his intent simply to possess and use them as potentially that he had the intent to distribute them.
Counsel, under some circumstances, I might be inclined to agree that the ingestion device carries a fair amount of weight. But I want to line up all of the evidence, and this is actually following on Justice McCullough's question, all the evidence that relates to distribution. Okay, we have the quantity, the presence of scales, partial packaging of both the heroin and cocaine into smaller street quantities, the presence of a known heroin-cutting substance, empty capsules, and the admission that he sold cocaine to, which obviously can have two different meanings. There's a little ambiguity there. But I've just lined up all of those facts. And on the one side, and on the other side, we have an ingestion device. I just don't see how this could be anything other than harmless error under those circumstances. Walk me through again how a reasonable jury could ignore all of that evidence and say, well, he had an ingestion device, therefore he wasn't dealing.
Well, Your Honor, I think the other things that need to be added to the equation, though, other than just the ingestion device, is his statement that he's a heavy user. the business card, which was testified could be used either to package or to line up to use. So you've got not just the straw, but you've got the business card and his statement about use. So now the scale is a little bit different. It's not just the one thing. You've got other things that have to be considered as well. I can't put myself in the mind of the jury and determine what they might have done. But neither should the trial court. In this case, where the evidence was in our position sufficient
I think the harmless error question presumes that the trial court should not have done what it did, but the question is, did it really matter? So, I mean, I'm agreeing with you that the trial court, it's presumed the trial court erred if we're asking a harmless error question.
I guess the bottom line answer to that is we don't know. And unless it's remanded for retrial, we'll never know. Because it requires us to engage in speculation of what the jury would have done had they been given that instruction with the evidence that was produced at trial.
Okay. Ms. Ortiz, can I ask some questions about the cocaine? There was no testimony he used the cocaine, was there?
No, sir.
And you wouldn't use the straw for an ingestion device for crack?
Except if I recall correctly, I think it was powder.
Was it powder?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Good morning. May it please the Court, I'm Benjamin Katz, appearing on behalf of the Commonwealth. As this Court is well aware, the case concerns the application of well-established legal principles regarding the propriety of providing a jury with instructions concerning a lesser-included offense. This Court has previously rejected the notion that a jury instruction on the lesser-included offense must always be given. Rather, as Doncor and Leal make manifest, the defendant's entitlement to a jury instruction on the lesser-included offense hinges upon development in the record of more than a scintilla of evidence seeking to negate the element that distinguishes the greater offense from that which is the lesser included. Here the defendant endeavors to frame their argument as an exploration into the quantity and quality of independent evidence necessary to satisfy his burden for obtaining the instruction. But I would respectfully submit that fails to focus those efforts on the element of intent to distribute, which I believe, Justice Kelsey, your question elucidates. That is the issue before the court. What independent evidence attacked the element of intent to distribute? And
what do we mean by independent evidence? I thought it was just evidence and there's a scintilla or there's not.
I think the jurisprudence makes clear that what is meant is something other than the testimony of the defendant to the contrary. So the testimony, well, I never intended to distribute, is not independent evidence.
Get you a jury instruction? I mean, you could disbelieve it because it's totally implausible, but
I think Leal makes manifest that in that instance you had the defendant's testimony. I never intended to maliciously wound the victim. I was coming to the defense of myself and others. I intended to only assault him. And this court said, well, that's not enough. That's not independent evidence, your testimony alone. I submit reading that jurisprudence, there must be some independent evidence other than the testimony. And perhaps in this case, if we had evidence seeking to offer an innocent explanation of the capsules, or perhaps evidence explaining the presence of currency, the packaging perhaps, and if one could come up with an innocent explanation for the presence of raw heroin, that would be the sort of evidence that would justify a lesser included instruction on simple possession. But the means of ingestion, the straw, is not mutually exclusive. As the Detective Burton indicated at trial, those things go hand in hand. The use and distribution are not exclusive and are frequently found together. So to focus on that means of use alone does not satisfy the defendant's burden to offer independent evidence seeking to negate the element of intent to distribute. And here, as the court has observed, there's manifest evidence in the record demonstrating that intent. Not only the statements of the defendant himself, but the packaging, the quantity. And his statement that he had purchased heroin that morning is belied by the fact that he's found in bed early in the morning with his family asleep around him. And certainly the notion that he bought a bundle, which the expert indicated on the street is about 10 capsules, is belied by the fact that he has 47 capsules in his possession. So there is not the manner of independent evidence in this record that the jurisprudence contemplates in order to obtain a lesser-included offense instruction. With that, I'd be happy to address any questions that the court may have. Otherwise, I will rely on my brief.
Everybody?
Just briefly, there's one error that both the appellant and the appellee made in our in our recitation of facts in our brief. And that touches on something the Attorney General just mentioned, the statement attributed to Mr. Creasy that he had just bought heroin that day. I think we all jumped to conclusions and assumed that that's in fact what was going to be said, or we sort of read between the lines. But when you actually look at pages 110 and 111 of the joint appendix, the question is asked, and then he told you, this is lines 24 and 25, and then he told you that he had just bought a hair bundle of heroin that, and it's blanked out. The answer is yes. I think we both filled in the blanks that the answer was going to be that day, but in fact that's not what was testified to. That was not the evidence before the court. So it still remains unanswered as to when he had purchased that bundle of heroin. So that doesn't necessarily give credence to the Commonwealth's argument that his statements that he had purchased that morning, that he was still in his underwear, had just been awoken, was incredible, because in fact that assumes that statement in fact was that he had purchased it that day. I would also submit that where we're looking at what independent evidence is, it has to be something other than the defendant's testimony. That almost sounds to me like the dangerous trend of burden shifting, that somehow the defendant has to produce evidence in their own case in chief that will negate the Commonwealth's case.
I don't think that's the case at all. I think independent evidence is simply that any defendant can just say, no, I didn't intend that. No, I wasn't there. There has to be some basis to distinguish the outright denial that every defendant will make in every case from something that really should be considered on the merits. And the independent evidence, there is independent evidence in this case, but it goes the opposite direction. So if you had the independent evidence of denial plus user paraphernalia plus some explanation other than the one you have for me at least, for the distribution paraphernalia, then you would have a clear case of independent evidence, and you probably would have gotten the jury instruction. So I'm not recoiling, as I think you are, with the idea that it has to be something other than the guy just saying, no, not true. Because that's another way of saying you get a lesser included in every case, no matter what. All you got to do is ask for it.
Well, then that also seems to, I think, put the defense in a position that the defendant had to have made a statement in any regards, whether before trial or at trial, denying the offenses, because if that is going to be what the supporting independent evidence is, that would warrant the lesser included offense.
Well, it's independent of that. That's my point. It's not asking him to say anything. It's saying, look, you can say all you want to, but you've got to show us something more than a scintilla, two or three kernels of something.
And therein lies the irony, is that his statements of admission that he had sold in the past are given the weight by the court that must prove the case of distribution. But if you were to make such denials, that would not be independent evidence.
What's the irony in that? He makes his own statement that he needs to negate, and he makes a statement that actually concedes the point?
But if you were to make the denials, Your Honor, and say, no, I didn't intend it, and the Commonwealth has this other evidence that would tend to support it, the Commonwealth attorneys would be making the argument, don't believe his statements, they're not credible. So I think the defense is put in a very difficult position where if he makes a statement, he is sort of damned if you do and damned if you don't. That if he makes a statement denying it, it's not going to be believed. But if he does make a statement stating it was his intent, then that's the evidence against him. And I think in this case where you've got the independent evidence that was produced through the Commonwealth's witnesses of the ingestion device, the business cards.
Suppose that he had just said to the officer, instead of I sell this stuff, I never sell it. I never have. I just use it. The independent evidence would be that plus the fact that there's user paraphernalia there. And he would have gotten the instruction. I don't see the unfairness in that, but you're pointing it out. I'm just not understanding it.
No. Yeah, I see the amount of time the court has
in. You may answer the question if you'd like.
The unfairness, Your Honor, is that it puts the defense in a position that it seems that no matter what he says is going to be weighed against the credibility of the officers, and the defendant's always going to lose when it comes down to his credibility versus the credibility of the officers. Because in the same position where he may have decided, I'm not a user, but the weight of the evidence from the Commonwealth's witnesses in regards to the quantity, the money, the packaging, et cetera, is that they're going to find that it's inconsistent with personal use. It's always going to be the defendant is on the losing end of that balance.
All right. Thank you very much. Call the next case.